قالت يا أيها الملأ أفتوني في أمري ما كنت قاطعة أمرا حتى تشهدون.
After reading the letter, the queen said, Nobles, let me have your counsel in this matter, for I make no firm decision without you. After reading the letter, the queen said, Nobles, let me have your counsel in this matter, for I make no firm decision without you.
The expression hatta tashhadun, until you are present or until you witness, means that at the time of deciding about important matters, Solomon considered their presence to be of vital importance, and also that whatever decision be made, they testified it to be correct. This shows that although monarchy was the system of government in Sabah, it was neither dictatorial or tyrannical. Rather, the sovereign decided matters through consultation with the nobility.
قالوا نحن أولو قوة وأولو بأس شديد والأمر إليك فانظري ماذا تأمرين.
They said, we are strong and are given to vehement fighting, but the decision is yours. Therefore, consider what you would like to command.
قالت إن الملوك إذا دخلوا قرية أفسدوها وجعلوا أعزة أهلها أذلة وكذلك يفعلون.
The queen said, When the kings enter a country, they cause corruption in it and abase those of its people who are held in honor. This is what they are wont to do. The queen said, When the kings enter a country, they cause corruption in it and abase those of its people who are held in honor.
This one sentence contains a pervasive observation about imperialism, about its impact and its wide-ranging consequences. No king invades another country out of goodwill. Occupation of the territories of others, the encroachments of conquering nations on others' land is not motivated by an intent to do good. The purpose of conquest is simply to enable the conquering nation to exploit the economic resources of the vanquished, to so thoroughly suppress other nations that they lose the courage to demand their rights. To facilitate this, the conquerors see to it that the vanquished nations are stripped of material prosperity and of all appurtenances of power and feelings of self-respect. They also crush those who have any pride in or sincere concern for their collective identity. Furthermore, they try to develop ignominious attitudes within the community of the defeated, encouraging them to behave slavishly, to act as sycophants, to work against and spy on each other, to ape, admire, and venerate the civilization of the conquering nation and hold their own in contempt. Gradually, they make the vanquished so accustomed to this state of abject servility that they become bereft of all other ability and so render, in return for monetary compensation, whatever service is required of them, howsoever dishonorable or contemptible.
This is what they are wont to do.
There are two possibilities with regard to this verse. A. The verse could either be the saying of Queen Sheba, which she might have added on to her previous sentence so as to emphasize her statement, or B. It could be from God, in parenthesis, to reinforce the queen's statement.
وَإِنِّي مُرْسِلَةٌ إِلَيْهِمْ بِهَدِيَّةٍ فَنَاظِرَةٌ بِمَا يَرْجِعُ الْمُرْسَلُونَ
I will send them a gift and then see with what answer my envoys return.
فَلَمَّا جَاءَ سُلَيْمَانَ قَالَ أَتُمِدُّونَنِ بِمَالٍ فَمَا آتَانِيَ اللَّهُ خَيْرٌ مِّمَّا آتَاكُمْ فَمَا آتَانِيَ اللَّهُ خَيْرٌ مِّمَّا بل أنتم بهديتكم تفرحون.
Now, when the envoy of the queen came to Solomon, peace be upon him, he said, Do you want to aid me with wealth? Whatever Allah has granted me is much more than what He has given you. Keep for yourselves your gift in which you are exulting. Now, when the envoy of the queen came to Solomon, peace be upon him, he said, Do you want to aid me with wealth? Whatever Allah has granted me is much more than what He has given you.
The purpose of this sentence is not to give vent to pride and arrogance, but rather to emphasize that Solomon, peace be upon him, did not have his eyes on their wealth. All he desired was that they should embrace the true faith, or at least submit to the system based on righteousness. If they were not amenable to either of these two options, then it was impossible for him to accept their gift of wealth, it being little more than a bribe, nor could he allow them to live as polytheists under an unrighteous system of life. Solomon, peace be upon him, took the view that the wealth that God had given him was far too abundant to make him covet that of others.
ارجع إليهم فلنأتينهم بجنود لا قبل لهم بها ولنخرجنهم منها أذلة وهم صاغرون.
Envoy. Go back to those who sent you, and we shall certainly come upon them with hosts, whom they will be unable to resist. We shall drive them out from there, and they will suffer humiliation and disgrace. Envoy, go back to those who sent you, and we shall certainly come upon them with hosts.
There is a subtle gap between this and the previous sentence, which is understood with a little reflection. What is being said here is this. Envoy, take this gift back to those who sent it to us. They will either have to come to us in submission, or we will mount an attack on them with our army.
قال يا أيها الملأ أيكم يأتيني بعرشها قبل أن يأتوني مسلمين.
Solomon, peace be upon him, said, My nobles, which of you can bring me her throne before they come to me in submission? Solomon.
Some points of the story have been left out here, namely that the envoys returned to the queen with her gift and reported what they had seen, whereupon Queen Sheba decided to go to Jerusalem personally and visit Solomon, peace be upon him. So she left Saba in royal splendor and sent word to Solomon, peace be upon him, that she wanted to visit his court, to become directly acquainted with his message, and to exchange views with him in person. Leaving all these details aside, the narrative resumes the story from the point of queens approaching Jerusalem at a distance of only 1 or 2 days' journey.
My nobles, which of you can bring me her throne before they come to me in submission?
This is the same throne about which the Hudhud had reported as mighty. See verse 23 above. Some Quranic commentators have erred grossly in their interpretation of this verse. They say that Solomon, peace be upon him, wanted to obtain the queen's throne before her arrival because he was afraid that if she became a Muslim, he would not be able to take it from her without her willing consent. Before her arrival, the queen was not a Muslim, and hence her possessions were lawful for Solomon, peace be upon him. What a strange image of a prophet! Why do not these commentators realize that, in addition to sending a verbal message, the Prophet Solomon, peace be upon him, also wanted to confront the queen and her courtiers with a miracle so that they could witness the extraordinary powers that God grants to his prophets? All this was done in order that they may recognize Solomon, peace be upon him, a true prophet. Some contemporary commentators of the Quran have committed even greater offense and translate the present verse as follows. Who among you can bring a throne for the queen? They do so even though the Quran uses the phrase Yatinni bi arshiha and not Yatinni bi arshi'in laha. Bi arshiha means her throne and not a throne for her. They mistranslate these words merely to get over the extraordinary character of the requirement mentioned in the Quran, whereby Solomon wanted to have the queen's throne brought to him, that is, brought over from Yemen to Jerusalem, and this too before her arrival.
قال عفريت من الجن أنا آتيك به قبل أن تقوم من مقامك وَإِنِّي عَلَيْهِ لَقَوِيٌّ أَمِينٌ
A stalwart of the jinn said, I will bring it to you before you rise from your council. Surely, I have the power to do so, and I am trustworthy. A stalwart of the jinn said, I will bring it to you before you rise from your council.
This shows that the jinn in Solomon's service were truly jinn and not human beings with extraordinary powers, as some rationalistically inclined scholars of our time believe. For obviously, Solomon, peace be upon him, would hold his court for 3 or 4 hours at the most, and Jerusalem was at least 1,500 miles from Ma'rib, the capital of Sabah. It would have been impossible for anyone to bring Queen Sheba's throne in such a short time, no matter how strong and powerful he might have been. This task could not have been accomplished even with the help of the jet planes of our own time. Further, the throne was not unattended, lying in some wilderness. It was within a palace, which must have been heavily guarded. In fact, in the absence of the queen, it must have been stored in a secure place. If a human were to try to bring it, he would have needed a force of commandos. How could all of this have been done while Solomon, peace be upon him, was still holding his court? This could only be the work of a real jinn.
Surely, I have the power to do so, and I am trustworthy.
This was said by the jinn to assure Solomon, peace be upon him, that he was fully trustworthy, that there was no question of his running away with the throne, or of stealing any valuables from it.
قال الذي عنده علم من الكتاب أنا آتيك به قبل أن يرتد إليك طرفك فلما رآه مستقرا عنده قال هذا من فضل ربي ليبلوني أأشكر أم أكفر ومن شكر فإنما يشكر لنفسه ومن كفر فإن ربي غني كريم.
And he who had some knowledge of the book said, I will bring it before the twinkling of your eye. When Solomon saw the throne placed firmly beside him, he cried out, This is by the grace of my Lord, so that he may test me whether I give thanks for his bounty or act with ingratitude. Whoever is grateful is so to his own good, and whoever is ungrateful, let him know that my Lord is all-sufficient, most bountiful.
And he who had some knowledge of the book said, I will bring it before the twinkling of your eye.
It is not clear who this person was or what kind of special knowledge he had. Nothing is known about this book either. The Quran does not provide these specifics, and Hadith, too, is silent about the details. As for the Quranic commentators, they have expressed different opinions on these questions. Some say that this was an angel. Others believe that he was a human being, and there are even differences of opinion among those who think him a human. Some say that he was Asaf bin Berechaya, who, according to the Jewish rabbis, was the prince of men. Some say he was Khidr, and some identify him with still others. Razi insists on his being none other than Solomon, peace be upon him, himself. But none of these opinions has any solid basis to support it, and Razi's opinion seems to be in contradiction with the context in which the statement occurs. Likewise, there are different opinions about the book as well. Some say it means Allah al-Mahfuz, the preserved tablet. Others think that it means the Book of Law. But all of these are conjectures. Similar conjectures have been made about the knowledge which this person had derived from the book. We only accept whatever has been said in the Quran or which is evident from its words. That person was definitely not a jinn. And it is not improbable that he was a human being. He had some kind of extraordinary knowledge which was derived from one of the scriptures. The jinn had claimed, trusting his physical prowess, that he would bring the throne in a few hours. This person brought it in the twinkling of an eye with the help of his knowledge.
When Solomon saw the throne placed firmly beside him, he cried out, This is by the grace of my Lord, so that he may test me whether I give thanks for his bounty or act with ingratitude.
The Quranic statement is quite clear. Both the gigantic jinn and this person claim to have the ability to bring the throne. But unlike the claim of the jinn, this person actually brought the throne within a moment of his claim being made, thus showing himself to be right. Just reflect on these words. I will bring it before the twinkling of your eye. When Solomon, peace be upon him, saw the throne placed firmly beside him, he cried out. Verse 40. Anyone who reads this sentence without any preconception will be led to the view that no sooner had this person made his claim than he actually brought the throne. There is no need here to have recourse to complicated interpretations. Solomon saying, "This is by the grace of my Lord, so that he may test me whether I give thanks for his bounty or act with ingratitude." Verse 40. Also makes sense if the accomplishment was of some extraordinary nature. Had one of his clever servants made arrangements to bring expeditiously the queen's throne, there would have been no reason for Solomon, peace be upon him, to exclaim, "Hada min fadli Rabbi." This is by the grace of my Lord. Nor would he have entertained the fear that the arrangements to obtain the throne would make him ungrateful. How could a believing king be susceptible of arrogance merely because of the efficiency of one of his servants, especially when he was not an ordinary believer but a prophet? It may well be asked how the throne was carried over the distance of 1,500 miles, appearing in Solomon's court within the twinkling of an eye. In this regard, it must be stated that our notions of time and space, of matter and motion, are based on our limited observation and experience, are applicable only to us and not to God. Thanks to His infinite power, God can cause anything, be it the sun or a planet immensely greater than the sun, to travel at a speed of millions of miles per second. When we are talking of God with such power, what difficulty is there in believing that a throne was carried to a distance of a few thousand miles within the twinkling of an eye? Imagine, just one command of God brought this vast universe into existence. God's mere gesture would suffice to make the queen's throne travel at the speed of light. After all, the same Quran contains the statement that one night God took his servant Muhammad, peace be upon him, from Mecca to Jerusalem and brought him back all within one night.
Whoever is grateful is so to his own good, and whoever is ungrateful, let him know that my Lord is all-sufficient, most bountiful.
God is not in need of anyone's thanks. His might and power neither increase by anyone's gratitude nor diminish by anyone's ingratitude. He is God by himself, because of himself, and not because of anyone's acceptance of his divinity. This is stated in the Quran through the words of Moses, peace be upon him. Moses said, "Were you to disbelieve, you and all those who live in the earth, Allah is still self-sufficient, innately praiseworthy." Ibrahim 14:8. According to a hadith Qudsi, God says, "O my servants, if all of you, men and jinn, were to become like the heart of the most pious person among you, it will not add anything to my kingdom. O my servants, if all of you, men and jinn, were to become like the heart of the most wicked among you, it will not diminish anything from my kingdom. O my servants, these are your own deeds which I credit to your account and then reward you for them. So, whosoever receives good, he should thank God, and whosoever receives something otherwise should blame himself."
قَالَ نَكِّرُوا لَهَا عَرْشَهَا نَنْظُرْ أَتَهْتَدِي أَمْ تَكُونُ مِنَ الَّذِينَ لَا يَهْتَدُونَ
Solomon said, "Disguise her throne for her and let us see whether she gets to the truth or is one of those who are not guided to what is right."
Solomon said,
"The details of the queen's visit to Jerusalem and her initial welcome have been omitted. Now the narration turns to the events after her arrival at Solomon's palace.
Disguise her throne for her and let us see whether she gets to the truth or is one of those who are not guided to what is right."
This sentence has two meanings. A. Whether on finding her throne in Jerusalem so far away from her own place, she would be able to recognize it as her own or not. And B. Whether she would be led by witnessing this miracle to embrace the truth. This should also dispel the misunderstanding of those who say that Solomon, peace be upon him, wanted to take the queen's throne for himself. For here, he himself says that he did this in order that she may be led to true guidance.
فَلَمَّا جَاءَتْ قِيلَ أَهَكَذَا عَرْشُكَ قَالَتْ كَأَنَّهُ هُوَ وَأُوتِينَا الْعِلْمَ مِنْ قَبْلِهَا وَكُنَّا مُسْلِمِينَ
When the queen arrived, she was asked, "Is your throne like this one?"
She said, "It seems as if it is the same. We had already come to know this, and we had submitted ourselves."
When the queen arrived, she was asked, "Is your throne like this one?" She said, "It seems as if it is the same."
This also refutes the opinion of those who have interpreted these verses to mean that Solomon, peace be upon him, wanted to have a throne made for his guest, the queen, that he had invited tenders for it, that one robust artisan offered to make it within a certain time, but another, more skilled craftsman offered to make it instantly. The verse leaves no scope for any such fancies. For as this verse categorically states, Solomon, peace be upon him, had asked who would bring the queen's throne. Ayyukum ya'tinni bi'arshiha. And when the queen came, Solomon, peace be upon him, ordered his servants to disguise her throne for her. Nakiru laha arshaha. Whereafter she was asked if that was her throne. Ahakadaha arshuki. And she said, Ka'annahu huwa. It seems as if it is the same. Verse 42. These unambiguous verses exclude all such interpretations, and if any doubt remains, the verse that follows should be enough to dispel it.
We had already come to know this, and we had submitted ourselves.
Queen Sheba made it clear that even before observing this miracle, she and her nobles were convinced on the basis of what they had heard about Solomon, peace be upon him, that he was a prophet, not just a king. Her statement, "It seems as if it is the same," after seeing the throne, makes it abundantly clear that this would have been a meaningless sentence if Solomon, peace be upon him, had had the throne made for her and it were not her own. Were we to assume that this was some replica of the queen's throne, even then there was no point in a sun worshipper exclaiming, "We had already come to know this and we had submitted ourselves or had become Muslims."
وصدها ما كانت تعبد من دون الله إنها كانت من قوم كافرين.
What prevented her from accepting the true faith? Was her worshipping other gods beside Allah? For she belonged to an unbelieving people.
What prevented her from accepting the true faith? Was her worshipping other gods beside Allah? For she belonged to an unbelieving people.
This statement is from God and is meant to explain the position of Queen Sheba. It identifies that she was born into an unbelieving nation, and her denial of the truth was because of this rather than because of any stubbornness on her part. She was misguided because as she grew up, the only deity she saw being worshipped was the sun. However, as soon as she came into contact with Solomon, peace be upon him, her eyes opened and she did not hesitate for a moment to leave her old ways.
قِيلَ لَهَا دُخُلِ الصَّرْحِ فَلَمَّا رَأَتْهُ حَسِبَتْهُ لُجَّةً وَكَشَفَتْ عَنْ سَاقَيْهَا قَالَ إِنَّهُ صَرْحٌ مُمَرَّدٌ مِّنْ قَوَارِيرٍ قالت رب إني ظلمت نفسي وأسلمت مع سليمان لله رب العالمين.
She was told, "Enter the palace." But when she saw it, she thought it was a pool of water, and she bared both her calves to enter into it. Solomon said, "This is a slippery floor of crystal." Thereupon she cried out, "My Lord, I have been inflicting much wrong on myself. Now I submit myself with Solomon to Allah, the Lord of the whole universe."
She was told, "Enter the palace." But when she saw it, she thought it was a pool of water, and she bared both her calves to enter into it. Solomon said, "This is a slippery floor of crystal."
This was the last convincing proof which served as an eye-opener for the queen. The first impression was created by Solomon's letter with its unusual beginning, "In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful." The second incident that impressed the queen was Solomon's rejection of her expensive gifts, which told her that she was dealing with a different kind of king. The third impression was created by reports of the queen's own envoys who informed her of Solomon's piety and wisdom and of the mission espoused by him. All this prompted the queen to make the journey to Jerusalem. She refers to it in her sentence, We had already come to know this, and we had submitted ourselves. The fourth impression was created by the sudden arrival of the royal throne from Marib, which made it clear to her that Solomon, peace be upon him, enjoyed God's support. To cap it all, the extent of Solomon's God consciousness and piety and of his feelings of immense gratitude to God were obvious, and all this in spite of availability in abundance of the means for a life of ease and luxury. Thus, the difference between Solomon's way of living and of those obsessed with worldly goods and pleasures was blatantly clear. These were the things which made her say the words contained in the verses that follow.
Thereupon she cried out, "My Lord, I have been inflicting much wrong on myself. Now I submit myself with Solomon to Allah, the Lord of the whole universe."
This story of Solomon, peace be upon him, and Queen Sheba is found both in the Old and the New Testaments, as well as in the rabbinical traditions. But the Quranic account is different from these. A succinct account of this story, as told in the Old Testament, is as follows. Now when the Queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon, she came to Jerusalem to test him with hard questions, having a very great retinue and camels bearing spices and very much gold and precious stones. When she came to Solomon, peace be upon him, she told him all that was on her mind, and Solomon answered all her questions. There was nothing hidden from Solomon which he could not explain to her. And when the Queen of Sheba had seen the wisdom of Solomon, peace be upon him, the house that he had built, the food of his table, the seating of his officials, and the attendance of his servants, and their clothing, his cupbearers, and their clothing, and his burnt offerings which he offered at the house of the Lord, there was no more spirit in her. And she said to the king, "The report was true, which I heard in my own land of your affairs and of your wisdom. But I did not believe the reports until I came, and my own eyes had seen it. And behold, half the greatness of your wisdom was not told me. You surpass the report which I heard. Happy are your wives. Happy are these your servants who continually stand before you and hear your wisdom. Blessed be the Lord your God, who has delighted in you and set you on his throne as king for the Lord your God. Because your God loved Israel and would establish them forever, he has made you king over them, that you may execute justice and righteousness." Then she gave the king 120 talents of gold and a very great quantity of spices and precious stones. There were no spices such as those which the Queen of Sheba gave to King Solomon. Moreover, the servants of Huram and the servants of Solomon, peace be upon him, who brought gold from Ophir, brought algum wood and precious stones. And the king made of the algum wood steps for the house of the Lord, and for the king's house, lyres also, and harps for the singers. There never was seen the like of them before in the land of Judah. And King Solomon, peace be upon him, gave to the Queen of Sheba all that she desired, whatever she asked besides what she had brought to the king. So she turned and went back to her own land with her servants. 2 Chronicles 9, 1-12. In the New Testament, we find only the following sentences of Jesus, peace be upon him, about Queen Sheba. "The queen of the south will arise at the judgment with the men of this generation and condemn them, for she came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon, peace be upon him. And behold, something greater than Solomon is here." Matthew 12:42 and Luke 11:31. In the rabbinical traditions of the Jews, the account is similar to that of the Quran. The absence of the Hudhud, its return and its report about Sheba and its queen, Solomon's letter to her, the Hudhud's manner of delivering that letter to her, the queen's holding a meeting of her minister's council, her dispatch of an expensive gift to Solomon, peace be upon him, her arrival in Jerusalem, and her meeting with Solomon, peace be upon him, her thinking that Solomon, peace be upon him, was surrounded by a pool of water, and her lifting up her skirt to enter the pool, all of this is similar to the Quranic account. Where there are differences, they pertain to Solomon's response upon receiving the gift, the account of how the queen's throne was brought over from Jerusalem, and in Solomon's gratefulness to God at every step, and in the eventual acceptance of the true faith by the queen. A major difference is that in the rabbinical traditions, we find no reference to Solomon's tawhid and God consciousness, and the worst detraction is the allegation that Solomon, peace be upon him, slept with the Queen of Sheba and begot an illegitimate child, and that it was in this illegitimate lineage that Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, who would destroy Jerusalem, was born. The truth is that a group of Jewish scholars have harbored enmity towards Solomon, peace be upon him. They have accused him of violating the commandments of the Torah, of his arrogance on account of his kingdom, of pride in his wisdom, of being a henpecked husband, of a luxuriant lifestyle, and even of polytheism and idol worship. Because of such propaganda, the Bible presents Solomon as a king rather than as a prophet, and that too as a king who, in violation of God's command, loved several polytheistic women, and whose heart turned to other gods. See 1 Kings 11:1-11. The Quranic account, however, restores Solomon, peace be upon him, to his rightful position. Such a shift should have been gratefully received by the Israelites, for the Quran has removed all the filth that had been flung at these most venerable personages of Israel. How ungrateful, then, it is that the Israelites remain inimical to the Quran and to the Prophet, peace be upon him, who brought it.